I'm Susan Barrett, and with me are Rand and Carolyn, of course. And we're so glad you're here talking with us on all this. We continue to think this is a really good vehicle to share with you. And as Carolyn said earlier, we want your input into what topics you would like us to work on for, work with later, because it is your program, and we are here to help. We realized last time that when we asked you questions, we probably weren't giving you a chance to reply before we rushed into talk, so we're trying to start a new pattern of waiting 10 seconds after we say something to let the words get to you out in the phone lines, and then you can say something. And we're scheduled to end at 10, but if we're really in the middle of a hot conversation, it doesn't matter to us if it goes over a few minutes. Now, Rand will introduce Gail Kwame from the Regional Medical Library at the University of Washington. Gail will be talking about helping people find consumer health information. And Rand, you might even want to tell them how you happen to know Gail.
Oh, dear. Let's see. We've known each other for several years. I don't remember the exact meeting. It was a bar somewhere, wasn't it? No, I don't think so.
He's smiling.
I'm just kidding. In June, it was my pleasure to go up for a two-day meeting. Gail had invited me to be on her advisory committee, and this was a kind of a joint advisory group, as I recall, to talk about the services that the Regional Medical Library delivers, and that was a great time for me. They have a longer name, and I believe it's the National Networks of Libraries of Medicine Pacific Northwest Region.
That's right.
Do I get STAR for that?
Yes.
Well, partly I had a crib sheet. but anyway, you folks are part of the University of Washington, and it's actually, am I correct that it's actually the Health Sciences Library has a contract?
That's correct.
And that forms your unit.
That's correct.
And in many ways, what the Regional Medical Library people do are very similar to what we do in the state library, especially in library development, in the sense that they go out and do trainings and will do consulting, and they do some sub-grants and awards, as Kathy said. So anyway, I'm not going to take much more time. Here's what I know about Gail. She is the Consumer Health Coordinator, and a couple of years back, she and Elizabeth Yakia worked together on doing some trainings on how public libraries could help to meet the consumer health needs of their patrons, as I recall. And the other thing I know is that Gail lives in Milton, Washington. So without further ado, Gail, you can come in and correct all the wrong things that I just said. We're happy to have you. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure. Thank you, Rand. And I'm really happy to be on the call and have an opportunity to reach some of the folks that are in some of the farther-flung areas of the state. And you are the exact people that we are mandated to work with. We're part of our contract is to really work hard to reach underserved and underrepresented groups and areas. And I know that the folks in the rural areas of our state have a harder time getting to conferences and having access to training opportunities. And so this is a great opportunity for us to be on this call and have you for an hour. And before we're finished, I hope I can make it clear that we're certainly available to you either by phone, email, or if you can get a group together that you think would benefit from some in-person training, we can certainly talk about that as well. As Rand mentioned, I did do a kind of a dog and pony show coordinated through Elizabeth there at the State Library a couple of years ago, and hopefully all of you received a little packet of materials that I have mailed out, and thank you, Susan, for doing that. A couple of things in that packet that I just wanted to draw your attention to at first are, one is kind of a full-color trifold brochure with a picture of a family on the front cover, and that is a brochure that kind of just goes over a broad stroke overview of our office and our program and some of the benefits of becoming a member of our network. And I do want to point out that if you are not already a network member, it costs you nothing to become one. And what membership does for you is gives you access to not only our staff and our expertise, but certainly other medical library and medical information experts across the five states. And we do have a listserv called HLIBE, Health Libraries Northwest, that even if you're not a network member, you're welcome to subscribe to. And it does vary you with messages, but it's access to health information experts. And if you ever need one of those hard-to-find medical articles, you can post a request up on that list, and somebody's almost always going to help you out. So it's a nice group to be affiliated with. And both Kathy and Rand did a great job of giving you kind of an overview of our program, and I think Rand's analogy to us as a state library is a good one. And we're kind of in a centralized location here at the university, and one of my colleagues likes to say we have the best jobs because we sit here on this, you know, wonderful campus and have access to all these wonderful resources, and we serve everybody but this campus. We get to go out and work with folks like you, which is really our pleasure. The other brochure I want to point out is the another one that's a white trifold brochure, and it says the National Network of Libraries of Medicine and Public Libraries. In our last five-year contract cycle, for the first time, all eight of the regional medical libraries were asked to kind of work in concert towards some common initiatives, and one of them was focusing on public libraries as agents of health information. There was a pilot project done in the southeastern part of the United States, and it was learned that absolutely public libraries make logical partners to provide health information. There are certainly folks coming in asking for it at your libraries, and one way we could support those efforts was to provide some training, as well as we have created a website for public libraries on partnerships with health information experts. And so the classes that you see listed in this brochure are some that we had created specifically to work with public libraries and make you a little more comfortable in providing health information. I kind of call health information and legal information kissing cousins, because none of us feel like we're experts in those areas, and I always squirm a little bit when I get, you know, legal type questions. I do substitute in the Pierce County Library System every so often down in Sumner, and I squirm when I get kind of those legal questions, and then I always squirm when I get the dreaded statistics questions, and I know there are people who probably squirm when they get the medical questions. And so anything we can do to help you feel like you've got a little more tools in your tool belt, we're happy to help out with. So to kind of just get this discussion going, I thought I would just kind of fire away and just talk a little bit about why it's important for us to even know about health information. And, you know, one thing I say is health or lack of health is something that we all understand. It's something that we all as human beings probably have in common. It's something we have experienced ourselves, having illness or disease. Somebody we know has, either a relative or some other loved one. I recently taught a class about health information in the media and interviewed one of the librarians at the Oregonian newspaper in Portland, and she gave me a little soundbite. I thought it was so great. She said, health is kind of like the weather. It's always on everyone's mind. And I thought, you know, that's very true, and we hear about it every day in the news. It's on covers of, you know, mainstream magazines. I used to subscribe to U.S. News and World Report, and I think about every 3 months the cover story has something to do with health. Just in the news this morning, I don't know if you heard that high blood pressure goes up during the winter months, so, you know, it's making the headlines all the time. We're hearing about it. Jean Anderson on Channel 5 here in Seattle has her, you know, health link bit that she does. But also, people are looking for it, especially online. There was recently a Harris poll done in July of 2007 that gave some pretty staggering statistics about the number of adults who are going online for health information. It's up to 160 million people of all U.S. adults who have ever searched for health information online, from 136 million last year and 117 million in 2005. So it's a 37% increase over 2 years of people looking for health information online. That's pretty amazing. I've also heard a statistic that it's the third most popular online activity after email and shopping. So it's huge, huge activity going on the internet there, people looking for health information. But the other factor that's really important for us to be aware of is the issue of health literacy or lack thereof, and it's a big predictor of health outcomes. The National Network of Libraries of Medicine does have a page dedicated to the topic of health literacy. It has lots of resources on it, and I would encourage you to take a look at it. When we're done here, you can just, believe it or not, if you Google health literacy and click on I Feel Lucky, our page is the first one that comes up, and we didn't pay anybody to do that. I would encourage you to take a look at it. But one of the things that is quoted in there is the definition of health literacy from the Healthy People 2010 report, which says it's the degree to which individuals have the capacity to obtain, process, and understand basic health information and services needed to make appropriate health decisions. In other words, people need to be able to process information well in order to make informed healthcare decisions, and that's really the foundation of our work. We truly believe that if people have access to authoritative quality health information, they're better positioned to manage their own health and having conversations with their healthcare providers. And just being more informed in general about themselves or their family members. Also, patients are now encouraged to be more actively involved in their health care, either encouraged by choice or by force, depending on, you know, what's going on with their managed health care program or HMOs or whatever. You know, we're lucky to get 10 minutes with our doctor anymore, so we have to manage that time pretty well and come in prepared, armed with good information so we have the right questions to ask is really important. So it's important for us as health information professionals to know how to steer our patrons to authoritative resources to aid in their decisions. Let's just get a little conversation going here before we launch off into talking about the online resources. I know there are some great print resources out there too. So what are some of the things that you folks look for in print materials in your collections? To know whether or not, you know, they're worth your time and energy to consult when looking for health information. What are some of the things you look for?
I look for a medical dictionary.
Okay.
Janet.
And this is Clancy Poole. Often I have patrons who are want to search drugs as far as they've gotten a new prescription and everything's in such a hurry, they want to check the side effects and more about specific drugs.
Okay. And what? How do you know which drug resource is worth picking up off the shelf? What helped you make that decision?
Well, I look to see who is sponsoring it primarily, and if it's a commercial site as opposed to a informational site, I guess, is the correct term.
Okay. So you're kind of looking for bias, you're looking to see if it might be a vested interest, or,
yeah,
you know, if it's funded by a pharmaceutical company, it might have a slant or bias.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with the print material, right? So if you're looking for, you know, a book or a pamphlet or a brochure or whatever, those are the kinds of questions you might ask when looking at your print materials in your collections too. You know, who published this? Who paid to produce this thing in the first place? Or who's the author and are they an expert? You know, what the format? Maybe somebody just needs a brochure, or maybe somebody wants a textbook. You know, you folks know how to read your patrons in terms of, you know, their comfort level with what types of information, and then matching them up with an appropriate format of information. What's another big issue when it comes to health information that you can think of?
Currency,
yeah, that's a big one. And why is that an issue?
Because the field is changing so quickly.
Right. As I mentioned, there was that study that's being reported on today in the news about, you know, high blood pressure goes up in the winter months, and it's likely tomorrow we're going to hear something different. You know, it seems like we hear these opposing reports all the time, too, because the research is ever-changing. And you're going to see a lot of news stories, by the way, I noticed this morning about cardiac death, because the American Heart Association is having their annual conference, so all these people are reporting out their research findings at this conference right now, so all the news is about cardiac issues. But you're right, currency is really important with a lot of medical and health information because it's ever evolving and new research is always being done. So thank you for that. The last thing I think I look for in print materials is how easy is it for me to get at what I want? If I'm having to flip through, you know, pages and pages and pages just to get to the one paragraph that I think is going to answer my question, then it's kind of like, you know, trolling around on the web. If it's too hard to get at what I need, I'm going to move on. So that's another thing that plays into what I'm going to use a print item. So, of course, similar questions arise when we're looking at online health information. A couple of you alluded to that. In the packet I sent out to you, another piece that I sent is something I printed off from Medline Plus. It's called the Medline Plus Guide to Healthy Web Surfing. And this you can find this from MedlinePlus.gov under the About Medline Plus link. Just so you know, this is something you're welcome to print off and have out at your reference desk to hand out to patrons that come talk to you about health information, because you know they're going to go out and search on their own before they ever talk to you anyway. So at least equip them with something they can walk away with for how to look a little more critically at online health information. So some of the things that the Guide to Healthy Web Surfing talks about is consider the source and use recognized authorities, just as we talked about with the print items. Know who is responsible for the content and ways to do that online or to look at the About Us. You all know this. Or, you know, if there's an editorial board for the site, make sure they're from the health profession. You also want to focus on quality. I just mentioned the editorial board. Is it reviewed before it's posted? Those are the kinds of things. You might, if they are a site that uses health writers, you might want to see if there's information about who those people are. You'd be surprised how many people use the web as their soapbox about their health topic of interest. Look for the evidence, rely on medical research and not opinion. It does talk about checking for currency, which we already talked about. Beware of bias. So those are really good tips for how to look critically at online medical information. So what I feel is that it's really good to have kind of a toolkit of quality health information sites that you can steer your patrons to. So one of the other handouts that I have sent to you was just a one-page list of some websites called, and at the top it says Prescription for Success, which is the name of one of the classes that we teach, coincidentally. So Kathy mentioned MedlinePlus.gov, and I'll tell you a little bit of history about MedlinePlus. MedlinePlus rolled out in 1998, and what happened was PubMed, which is the free web-based access to the Medline database, which is the research journal literature database, PubMed came out in 1997. And the National Library of Medicine sponsors PubMed as well. Well, they learned very quickly that about 30% of the users of PubMed were members of the general public. Well, if any of you have ever searched the Medline database, either through PubMed or any other interface, you know that it is not consumer-friendly. It's pretty technical research journal literature that's in there. There are some consumer titles indexed in there, but it's not the most friendly to the general public interface. So pretty quickly they ramped up and decided they better get a consumer health information portal going, while at the same time, as Kathy mentioned earlier, they were mandated to do so by the legislature because the internet had taken off by this time. We're in 1997, 1998, and as I discussed earlier, there were these trends of people looking for health information, and the government said, look, we better put something out there that's going to be reliable and authoritative instead of letting people with vested interests be the ones out there providing all the health information. So MedlinePlus came out in 1998. When it was first introduced, it only had about 22 health topics on it. It now has over 700 health topics. And most of the site is also available in Spanish. And I know some of you are out there in areas that have a high Spanish-speaking population, so you'll be happy to know. Even if you don't speak Spanish, you can get to a topic page on Medline Plus and click on a tab in the upper right-hand corner that says Español and find parallel information in Spanish. So hopefully that's reassuring to those of you working with Spanish-speaking folks. So I'm guessing that a lot of you have heard of or used MedLife Plus already. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Use it personally, too, not just for the...
That's right. That's right. If it's Janet Lyon, you better say yes.
Yes, I have.
I've been to Janet's library twice to do some training up there.
Well, I'm in a new library now.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
Columbia County.
I'm at Columbia County
okay.
now.
Okay.
I'll have you down one of these days.
Okay. I look forward to that. Thanks. Yeah, you have a new crop of people for me to talk to, huh?
Yes, I will.
So, anyway, as I say, my question, and Kathy mentioned, has kind of grown and grown over time as being a great starting place. And I really do believe it's probably one of the best starting places for health information. And one of my coworkers was talking about one of her nieces borrowed a sweatshirt from somebody at college not too long ago and unfortunately ended up getting scabies. Well, if any of you know what scabies is, it's kind of a nasty little skin insect that burrows under your skin and lays eggs and it's pretty nasty stuff. But she said, oh yeah, so not on MS Plus, and started looking it up. So like you say, we don't only use it for and work with our patients, but we can use it to find out about our own, you know, things that we hear are happening around us and find out, you know, some good authoritative information. What we like about MedLife Plus is that it is not a commercial site. So as we talked about earlier, there's not going to be bias or vested interest in there from people funding information to be posted on there. The links that are linked to are vetted by the librarians. They do have selection criteria guidelines, so I really do tout it as a great starting place. Do I believe it's the end-all be-all? Absolutely not. I think for cancer information, there are other sites that might be better than MedLife Plus, but of course MedLife Plus is probably going to link to those anyway. But I think it is, as they say, a great starting place, and then if you need to go deeper, you can. So a couple of the other things I sent in your packets that have some links to some of the other National Library of Medicine resources, and again, are they the end-all be-all? No, but they're government-sponsored and non-commercial, so again, great starting places. One is kind of a larger purple card that says Consumer Health on the top. And on the back side of that is a list of some of the websites that the National Library hosts that are specific to health consumers. So the first one is MedLife Plus. The next one is clinicaltrials.gov. And we're hearing more and more about clinical trials because there was some legislation passed a couple, 3 years ago stating that the results of all clinical trials have to be posted regardless of the outcome. For a while, we were only getting results of clinical trials that had positive results, and now we're hearing about those that maybe not had some positive results. But you also may have people in your area that are interested in participating in clinical trials, and that's where this site is very helpful because it lists database, it lists links to places that are recruiting for people to participate in clinical trials. AIDS Info is another site. NIH Senior Health, this site kind of rolled out slowly and has been growing and growing, and this site is geared specifically to seniors and their caregivers. So it's not as deep as the MedLife in resources, but they are tailored to that audience. And that site is interesting in that it has a lot of accessibility features built in terms of being able to get larger text. It also has a speech feature built right into the site. You don't have to download anything to get that speech feature to work. So NIH Senior Health will worth taking a look. Genetics Home Reference is a site that's been developed by the National Library to speak to conditions that have genetic components. I will say the reading level on the site is a little higher than I would like to see. The downside of medical information is that it's written at a pretty high reading level because of the medical terminology. Most of it's at about 12th to 15th grade level. And of course, our general public reads anywhere from, 5th to 8th grade. However, Genetics Home Reference has a really great feature on there. It's kind of like Biology 100, where it talks a lot about cells and DNA and genetics. And if you just need a primer on genetics, I would suggest you take a look at that. And then the last three resources listed on the back of that purple card are Talktown Helpful Products and HazMap. And these are created by another division of the National Library that focuses on toxicology and environmental health. So Talktown is a little interactive site. It's kind of deceptively cute. That talks about where you may encounter toxins at school, at home, on the farm, in the desert, depending on where
you live, the geography of where you live, there are several different scenes that you can look at there on Pottstown. Household products is a great resource. It's basically the MSDS sheets and talks about hazardous health effects of anything you might find under the kitchen sink in the garage. I was exhibiting at a biology teacher conference a couple, 3 years ago, and one of the gals that stopped by just fell in love with household products because she said her auto shop students have to find that kind of information about the things they're using in the auto shop. So we know antifreeze is one of the most toxic, poisonous things out there, and these kids are using it in auto shops, so they have to know what's in there that might have hazardous health effects. HazMath is an occupational health database, and it talks about people, for instance, that work in beauty shops or nail salons or all kinds of occupations and what might be some of the health concerns of people that work in different occupations. So another slant on health information. So that's another list of resources I would certainly encourage you to take a look at, and if you have websites at your libraries, to consider linking to them. But if you have to pick one, pick Medline Plus, that's what I would say. The other thing I sent out is a little kind of wallet-sized card. It has even more of the National Library of Medicine's websites on there. It also has the 1-800 number for us. You can call it toll-free. Excuse me, I'm going to cough for just a second. I'm on the very tail end of a cold, so I apologize for that. And then the other thing I sent, as I mentioned earlier, was this handout called Prescription for Success. And I heard somebody say earlier that they get a lot of drug questions. Well, I would encourage you to look at three different things. Medline Plus has drug information, but not only does it have drug information, it also has information about herbals and supplements. As we know, those are getting more and more popular, and the National Library of Medicine has paid for a license to what's called the Natural Standards Database. So if you go to Medline Plus, there's a link to a category of drugs and supplements. If you click on that, you'll get two rows of the alphabet, and the bottom one is the one for the herbs and supplements. So if you want to look up, for instance, red yeast rice, that's an herb that people are taking to reduce cholesterol. You'll get information about that herb. You'll find out what it's used for. But what I love about this database is it also has the evidence base for the use of that herb for different things. And it gives it a letter grade, A, B, C, D, or F. And it tells you what that means. So if it has grade A, that means that there's significant evidence or adequate evidence to support the use of that herb for that condition. So red yeast rice has a grade A to reduce cholesterol. So it's not exhaustive, but it's quite a nice resource. And I believe the National Library just rolled out another herbal supplement database as well, so you can probably get to that from the National Library of Medicine's homepage. Two other resources that are on the handout that I sent out. One is drugs.com. Yes, it's a .com, and it is pretty heavy with sponsored ads, that they have a kind of disclaimer that explains why they do that. They do that so that they can give you access to what they've got. And what they're providing you at no charge is access to the standard, the gold standard media, I can't remember the full name of it, I'm sorry, database of drugs, which is a reliable source of information about drugs. But what I like about this site is it does have a pictures of pills, and it has a drug identification wizard. So the example I give is if somebody finds a white round pill on their son's bedroom floor and they're wanting to make sure it's just Tylenol, there's a place on this site where you can use drop-down menus to say it's white, it's round, it's a tablet, and you can even look at the imprint, which is usually a series of numbers and letters on a pill, and put that in there and it'll tell you what it is. So that's kind of a neat little resource to be familiar with. And then the other site that's on this list is Drug Digest, drugdigest.org. And what's nice about the Drug Digest site is it has a drugs interaction checker, because sometimes people are wondering about that. And it actually even includes things like grapefruit juice, which we have learned has inhibited the effectiveness of some drugs. So for the person that said drugs, you've got a toolkit of places you can go online. I know a lot of you have the physician's desk reference in your library, right? Yes. For pills, and you like it because it has the pretty color pictures of pills, right?
Yeah.
Okay, who can tell me why the physician's desk reference might not be the best starting place for drug information?
It's always out of date.
Well, I mean, a lot of print resources that are out of date as soon as they're published, yeah. The other, well, a couple different things I see with the PDR. First of all, the typeface is so darn small, you know, no human being can read it. But, frankly, pharmaceuticals pay to put those inserts in there. And so there is a little bit of a bias there. I think it's pretty exhaustive. But just so you know, that is an issue that the pharmaceuticals are paying to put those inserts in there. And that's how it gets produced, is through the money is generated by the pharmaceuticals doing that. Plus, I don't know that the information in there is all completely consumer-friendly. It has a lot of chemical interactions with things that the general consumer may not be as interested in. But it does have pretty color pictures of pills. But just so you know, there are a couple other websites out there that have pictures of pills now, too. I'm not saying throw away your PDR, but just tread a little lightly. I tend to steer people, if you want a good print resource for drug information, the Davis's Drug Guide for Nurses. I think it's written a little more for the layperson, and it's something you should consider. It's just a little small paperback that's produced once a year. So if your collection development budget allows for that, you might want to consider that one or something similar. But nursing literature tends to be a little more consumer friendly in my mind, just so you know.
Would you give us the name of that again, please?
Sure. Davis's.
Oh, Davis's. Okay.
Drug Guide for Nurses.
Thank you.
Who publishes it?
Davis. I don't know.
Davis.
I wish I could answer that off the top of my head. I don't know. I'm sorry. You can probably find it in OCLC.
Sure.
Also on the list, on that handout I sent you, is another resource for herbals, which is the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. They have a very nice herbals database that you can search on their website. And the URL has gotten more friendly. It used to be a little uglier than what you're seeing on this handout now. A couple other things I'll point out on this handout, and I'm not going to describe all of these in detail. The Family Doctor site is a great site for people that are looking for health information for families. There's sections on there for kids and for teens, and this is sponsored by the Pediatricians Association. For cancer, I mentioned the Medline Plus may not be the best first stop. I would say either cancer.gov, which is the National Cancer Institute, or cancer.org would both be great starting places. Medline Plus is just going to link you to those anyway, so you might as well start there. Cancer.gov is very rich with cancer resources. A couple other things I'll mention. DIRLINE, D-I-R-L-I-N-E, is a searchable database of health associations and organizations. And I steer people towards these because those folks are very vested in their topic. So if you have somebody that's been newly diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, like our lady that finished the New York Marathon the other day, did you see that on the news? Good for her. But if you find somebody that's newly diagnosed with MS and you want to steer them to a local support group or link them up with information that's tailored specifically to their condition, it's a great idea to steer them towards these associations because they're so dedicated to their causes and they often have local chapters. So that's DIRLINE. And the other one I'll mention is Lab Tests Online, which is also on that list. And again, this is a little bit different slant on health information, but I really like this site. It's looking at lab tests that you're likely to have done at your doctor's office, and it tells you what it is they're testing for and what they're looking for. If your doctor says, I want you to get a lipid profile, and you're like, well, why? It'll tell you what they're kind of looking for with that particular test. It'll also show you kind of what the ranges of normal values are. But from the flip side, you can also search this site by condition and see if there is a test designed to tell whether or not you have a given condition. So in my case, for example, sadly, Lou Gehrig's disease runs in my family. So if I wanted to go in there and see if there's some kind of test I could get to see if I could get, you know, tested for Lou Gehrig's disease, I could search it that way as well. And it's produced by a group of lab professionals and non-commercialized. So well worth taking a look at that. The others I already mentioned that are on that purple card, the Household Products, Toxitown, and Genetics Home Reference. Does anybody have a favorite site that they like to go to for health information?
This is Cynthia in Anacortes.
Mm-hmm.
Like HealthFinder.gov.
HealthFinder.gov. Thanks for bringing that up, Cynthia, because HealthFinder was born, for lack of a better word, before Medline Plus. And it is produced by the Department of Health and Human Services, so it's another government-sponsored site, as she mentioned, healthfinder.gov. I think their interface has gotten a little better over the years, even. And what I like about HealthFinder is it steers you toward agencies, health-related agencies. I don't know that they have as many health topics, but I think they do a good job with what they do. It's also available in Spanish, and if I remember right, don't they have an interface for kids as well?
So they also give the H-O-N symbol.
Right. And Cynthia mentioned an H-O-N, which is a little seal that you'll see on some health websites. It stands for Health on the Net Foundation. And it's sort of like a little accreditation seal. And what that means is the producers of that website are agreeing that their site adheres to the standards for the Health on the Net Foundation. My only reservation about that is that it is self-reported. And so, you know, the HON people troll around every couple of years, I think, to make sure the site is meeting their quality standards. And you can click on that seal on the respective site and see when it was last reviewed. But that is one indicator of quality, and I thank you for bringing that up. There are a couple others that are similar that you might want to just be aware of when you're looking at health websites to see if they have some kind of a little accreditation seal like that HON. So thanks, Cynthia. Anybody else? How about WebMD? Are any of you using or have people that come in and use WebMD?
I do have people that use it because they see it.
They see it on TV, huh?
Yes.
Or in magazines. And I tell people we kind of consider WebMD to be our biggest, for lack of a better word, competitor. Although we aren't a commercial venture by any stretch, but I don't know that there's anything wrong with WebMD. It's gotten kind of busy, I think, their interface. But they are a commercial venture, and they're at some point, if you dig deep enough and you want to get access to a journal article, you may be asked for a visa number or something, which is not something you would encounter in MedLife Plus. I think they've got a pretty good product, and you know, they've got the advertising dollars to get their name out there, which, you know, the government, we have to be good stewards of folks' tax dollars, and so we just can't sink a lot of money into slick advertising when we rely on our champions to get the word out about the National Library of Medicine's products. Thank you. So, kind of the next question that I have on my little script for myself here is kind of, you know, where do we go from here? So, what are some things that you feel like you can do to promote or focus on health in your respective library? Or what are some things you've already done?
This is Janet. I've worked with, well, in the past, I'm going to start it here too, but I've worked with the hospitals a little bit and encouraged them to go to Medline Plus. I encouraged them to come to the workshop when you had it in Pottery County.
Right, that was great. We had a gal from the hospital who was a telephone triage nurse. So she's somebody who's answering the phone, you know, kind of the Nurse Caroline that some of their insurance companies might have too. And she was just thrilled with Medline Plus and had never heard of it before. And she's like, I know how it is to help answer a lot of the questions I get on the phone. So thank you, Janet. That's a great example. What else? Have you ever put up like a health information display in your library?
This month, that, yep, that, and we work with a local hospital.
Mm-hmm.
They have health programs, and so.
Right, that's Sue Jacobson, right?
No, this is with United General.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we have a grant together to provide health information, and they do wonderful displays and brochures, put those up in the library, and work with them on their programs that they do by coming out to the rural area.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a great partnership for us.
That's great. Well, just so you know, for those of you that may want to put a health information display, we can send you you know, you've got a couple samples of some of the promotional materials that I sent to you. We've got even more than this. So if you are interested in doing that and want us to send you some of these promotional materials, we're happy to do that. What about finding other medical, are some of you ever working with medical libraries? Do you have medical libraries in your neighborhoods? I know Whitman County does.
This is Clancy from Whitman County. And one little thing we did was we invited some staff from the hospital to come down and assist us weeding our medical collection.
It's a great idea.
And, you know, gave them donuts, and if you bring them food, they will come. Showed them what we had and a little bit about our online resources and things.
Mm-hmm.
And found it to be a pretty successful idea.
That's great. Another thing you could do is talk to all the local hospital folks and see if you can get somebody to come in and do a, you know, just do a little lecture series or do a presentation. And, you know, every month there is some kind of a health observance. You know, October was Breast Cancer Awareness Month. You know, there's something every month. You know, there's February, I think, is heart, you know, Women's Heart Disease Month and the Red Dress Day and all that stuff. So, you know, you may want to think about having somebody come and do a presentation at the library and then have supportive materials around that. Because like I said, remember what I said at the beginning, health is like the weather. It's on everybody's mind, right? You could also offer a class about how to find quality health information. And we have curriculum materials I'm happy to send and share with you, Janet. You're an expert now. You can do your own.
No, I'll have you come.
But I have to have it. Or I can come, you know, kind of what we say is if you can get at least 10 people together, we'll talk about coming out and providing training at your location, too. And I mentioned that, right, that white brochure that has some of the classes that we teach, but we have others as well. And then as Kathy mentioned earlier on the call, we also do some funding, and we have kind of small buckets of money. So if you're thinking about offering a class, or if you're thinking about doing an exhibit at a health fair or some other community event, we do have little $500 mini awards that we can work with you on. To support those activities, if you want to produce materials to support those, or if you want to pay some travel money to bring somebody in, those kinds of things. We do have little buckets of money for you to provide outreach in your own community. Because as much as we love to come, you know, we come and then we go, and you folks are there and know your communities and have the connections. And so it's great if you can partner with people in your own communities to provide the health information there. We do have some bigger pots of money, about $2,000, to do planning. So if you're thinking about partnering with some groups in your neighborhoods to provide health information outreach that needs some kind of seed money to do some planning activities, maybe do a needs assessment or bring people in to work with you, do a task force or something. We do have some planning money. And then once a year, usually after the 1st of May, which is when our contract year starts, we have some bigger buckets of money to fund bigger projects. And you can see a list of those that are currently being done up on our website. An example is in Great Falls, Montana, the public library there is getting some money from us to partner with the local public health department in using information prescription pads, which are something that we also have available. And the idea is that the health professional is working, or you are working with somebody that's investigating the health issue. You write out the name of the condition or the drug or the test that somebody may have scheduled to get done on this little prescription pad that then refers them to Medline Plus when you know they're going to go off and search on their own after they're done talking to you. So you're at least sending them to a authoritative site to do that searching. So that's an example of a public library project that we funded recently, and we've certainly funded public libraries in the past to do some outreach projects as well around health information.
Gail, this is Linda Dunn from Grandview, Washington.
Yeah.
I have a few questions. One is, is there any training available that could be done through a video conferencing?
Absolutely.
And
Linda, you're like a plant. You're just like a plant, because tomorrow afternoon,
okay,
my colleague Linda Mildred is going to be offering a session called the RNL Rendezvous, and we offer these every couple months, and these are web conferencing through a product called Adobe Connect, and all you need is a telephone and a web connection. And tomorrow's topic is going to be about PubMed, which is the journal literature database, so you're welcome to sit in on that.
What time is that?
It's at 1 o'clock. Let me get to my homepage here. And it's if you go to our website, which is nnlm.gov/PNR for Pacific Northwest Region.
Okay.
And then there's a blue bar across towards the top of the page, and one of the links says Training and Educational Opportunities.
Okay.
And then the top thing says RNL Rendezvous, and it's tomorrow at 1 o'clock.
RLN, as in nothing?
RML, Regional Medical Library.
Oh, RML.
Mm-hmm. Rendezvous. Now, tomorrow may not be as much interest to you folks because it's the journal literature, and but it's kind of little-known goodies that are on the PubMed database. And if you just kind of want to see how the interface works, you could lurk a little bit in. You're welcome to, and these are all free of charge.
Okay.
We
have another question, too.
Okay.
I still have library patrons that, in spite of there being a lot of information, as you've told us, connected through the Internet,
yes,
they still want to see a book.
Yes.
Is there any place where specific books are recommended for particular ailments?
Yes.
I have people that still want the books.
Okay.
To know that other is available. They want to...
Sure. Through the Medical Library Association, one of the sections is the Consumer and Patient Health Information section. That's almost as bad as National Network of Libraries of Medicine, but anyway. It's
Medical Library Association.
Yeah, which is MLA.
Uh-huh.
Their website is mlanet.org.
MLANet?
Yes.
No space or no...
Correct.
Okay,
correct.
.org.
Yes.
Okay.
And then from their homepage there, there's a link that says sections, chapters, and groups, and we're looking at the section, and it's called the Consumer and Patient Health Information section, CAPHIS, and off of that link, there is a list to collection development resources, and if you want to email me, Linda,
okay,
I can send you this link.
Okay. I may be able to find it, but if I can't, I will email you.
Yeah, my email is gmarie, G-M-A-R-I-E,
uh-huh,
at u.washington.edu.
Okay.
We used to have this wonderful list called the Brandon Hill List. Have any of you ever heard of the Brandon Hill List?
Uh-uh.
It was a labor of love by a gal who has since retired, but she put together this wonderful guide of collection development for small medical libraries, and then she had a consumer health list as well, and it was based on your budget. And so she had little symbols next to the titles of these different books. You know, if you have this much money to spend, you must have at least these books.
But that's what I need
more than there's a similar animal out there, and if you email me, Linda, I can troll around and get it back
okay
to you, because it's not being published as regularly, and one of the aggregators is working on putting something similar together right now. But I wish there was something just like that still being produced. But there are similar bibliographies linked from this CAPHIS site that I mentioned a minute
okay
ago.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Gail?
Yes.
This is Cynthia. Could you please send that link to all of us?
Sure. I need to get email addresses, but maybe Susan can get that to me.
If she, this is Carolyn. If Gail, if you will email it to us, we'll send it out on the listserv.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I just need one person's email then. Who wants to be in charge?
S. Barrett at sexstate.wa.gov.
So I'll send it, these links to you, Susan, and
yes,
then you can get them out to the group.
Right, thanks.
You bet.
Gail, Rand here.
Hi, Rand.
The token male on this call.
No, Jim's here too.
Oh, pardon me. Sorry. I wanted to ask two things. One was, you mentioned the membership is free.
Correct.
And if you could just mention a couple of things that would be beneficial to our, you know, to those of us who are on this call.
Mm-hmm.
The state library has a membership, but why the others might want to have a membership. And the other thing I wanted to mention or ask you to mention was your web newsletter, The Dragonfly, and would that be useful to the people on the call?
Thank you, Ram. Okay, so Ram's first question is, why might you want to become a member? It gives you access to us, for one thing, but it also gives you access to our network members, many of whom are hospital or other medical libraries that may have specialized collections that have things that every so often you may need to, you know, borrow from. So resource sharing, as Kathy mentioned earlier, is kind of the backbone of the network. We were built on a system of resource sharing, and that still is, you know, one of the foundational activities across the network. But we also have announcements lists where you'll see, you know, announcements coming from us, from the National Library of Medicine, updates with things that are going on there. We also can support you, as I mentioned earlier, with promotional materials. We also are happy to refer you to somebody if you need somebody in your neighborhood, and we kind of know our network members pretty well and can refer you. But the biggest advantage is becoming a member makes you eligible for some of these funding opportunities that I mentioned. So that's kind of one of the prerequisites to get the funding, is that you do become a member. So those are some of the advantages, and just the prestige of having this beautiful certificate to hang on your wall, you know, is quite, you know, right up there, I'm sure, on your list. But, you know, we really do welcome public libraries and encourage public libraries to join, because we know you folks are getting these questions, and, you know, the more comfortable you can feel with getting health information out to your folks, the better off everybody's going to be. And, you know, you don't have to be a network member to get some of these services, but we would certainly love to have you join. The other question Rand asked is about the Dragonfly, which is our online newsletter that you can access from our website. It also does have an RSS feed on it. And this is kind of more newsy type things that we post up there. I posted an article up there not too long ago about how CDC now has a presence in Second Life, which is a virtual reality world you may or may not be hearing about out there. And another thing is we talk about some of the featured projects or some of our funding opportunities, of course, are listed there as well. But it's a little kind of more in depth than what you might see on our email announcements list. So different trends that are happening out there in terms of health information and delivery and those kinds of things. Health literacy is a big issue right now, so you're going to see a lot of information about that. Thank you for asking, Ram.
Did anyone else have any questions to ask Gail?
This is Cynthia and Cordis, and I just have two questions.
Okay.
You mentioned some great drug sites.
Yes.
LSSA, the Skies. Do you think that we still need to buy the PDR?
Are you happy to purchase it?
Yes.
If you want my honest answer, I would say no, but you know your patrons are probably going to be looking for it, so it's kind of a decision based on your budget.
Okay.
And the demand. But I think there are some great online resources, and I think that the Davis Guide is kind of a better alternative if you want my honest answer.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Another question was, do you have a site for alternative medicine that you would highly recommend?
The first place I steer people is the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine. They're on the NIH campus. And then we're blessed here in Washington State to have Bastyr University.
And how do you spell that?
Bastyr, B-A-S-T-Y-R. And they are a naturopathic college, but they also have a lot of alternative and complementary medicine classes and resources, and they also have librarians. So if you get a stumper and would like to get somebody with expertise in complementary alternative medicine, James Saxton and Susan Banks are delightful librarians there at Bastyr, and I'm sure would be happy to take your inquiries every so often.
Thank you. You repeat the name of that.
National, I'll send that one to Susan too, but it's the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine, NCCAM. And it's part of the National Institutes of Health. But they've got a great website. And if you're looking for journal literature in PubMed, said, there is a way to limit the your search to complementary alternative medicine journals. And there's probably ways to do that. I haven't, frankly, worked with it, but within ProQuest or, you know, I don't know if there's a way to do it in Gale Health and Wellness or some of the other resources you folks might have. But don't forget your databases, because a lot of the core medical journals are indexed in there.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
All right. Well, I thank everyone for your time today, and I'm happy to reply to email, or if you have our 800 number, you can get a hold of us that way, too. So.